Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021. I'm now here with Mike Enoch. Now, I think most of you will know who Mike Enoch is, famously of The Right Stuff and the TDS, and now of the National Justice Party. But Mike, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Mike Enoch, but I go by my real name for NJP, National Justice Party stuff, Mike Painovich. Some people probably have heard of me, maybe not, though I would guess that you had. You know, we do the Right Stuff. We've been doing the rightstuff.biz website for about 10 years now. We've been doing TDS, the podcast, for about 8 years. And last August of 2020, we founded the NJP, the National Justice Party, which is a white nationalist political alternative in the United States. As obviously we felt like the Republican Party was just not a viable vehicle for white people's political ambitions. And yes, before you tell us, we know it's a long shot. We're willing to take the risk. Like, a lot of people are like, well, you just you can't do it. I'm like, look, we know the odds, but what's the point? My thing is always like, well, if you're going to do it, you might as well be in it to win it. Like, you might as well go for the thing that you want and just push as hard as you can on your own issues, rather than forever trying to fit yourself into someone else's agenda. And so that was our philosophy, and it's been working. I mean, we have grown. Our first meeting, we probably had 60 or 80 people, and the meeting we had in November recently, we probably had about 240, 250 people. So they've been growing, and these are events, you know, they're private because of security concerns and things like that, but they've been growing. So it's been work.
I remember the first event, obviously, I wasn't there. I just mean, right. I remember seeing the clips from the first event. Was it in a barn?
Right. Okay. It was in a barn. It doesn't matter which barn that is. That's a whole other issue. But yeah, it was in a barn, but we've done them in a number of different places. You know,
no, the reason I brought that up is that it looked cool. It looked sort of, oldie worldy and, traditional.
I'm trying to cultivate a little bit of like a Huey Long type vibe, because I'm, I'm a little bit, I'm not the skinniest guy. I'm a little bulky, shall we say, to be charitable. Like try to do that like Huey Long type vibe. And, it's kind of cool. Like, people have really been liking it, and we've been doing other things. TDS and TRS, obviously, I'm going to just real quick shill get subscriptions because that's how I earn my living. That's my daily bread, is the subscriptions to TDS, myself and Alex and Sven and Jazz Hands. And now Warren Baylog, who's joined Jazz Hands as his co-host on FTN. That's how we all eat. Stryker as well, of course. So six people who literally the food on their plate depends on you guys subscribing to that site. And that also frees us up that we can do the activism through the National Justice Party and such too. So, yes.
Yeah. And Warren Baylog also does Modern Politics with Emily Yukas.
Right.
Which,
yes.
I've watched many episodes of that, and it's a really nice format. I've got to say, on Odyssey, you could never get away with it anywhere else. It's quite controversial subject matter, but they approach it in a really nice way. It's a good dynamic between the two of them. And as I said on another stream, I think that Emily's interventions are often really hilarious. Because Warren is very sort of serious, and then she'll say something offbeat. It's really nice.
Well, he's a very serious and very sort of like very direct. And he's like kind of like a no-nonsense, like look you in the eye and like give it straight. And then he just gets thrown when she does these like little things. Yeah, it's good. It's good.
It's good. It's
good care, yeah.
Yeah. So, and about supporting, so it's six people, and this is the thing that, I've been saying for years, that if people are supported in doing this stuff, then they can do more of it. Whereas otherwise they have to have real jobs in the real world, as it were, which then makes them vulnerable to doxing and firing, but it also takes up their time. Whereas, if you can do this full time, then, it's good for everyone.
So, like when we were doing it, when I was working in the so-called normie world as a computer programmer, I worked a 40-hour plus, because computer programs expected to work 50-hour work weeks a lot, because of how these companies operate. and the competition in the field. And we were doing it only on Monday. We would do on Sunday nights. And then Jesse didn't want to take up his Sundays anymore because everybody needs a day off. And so we started doing it Monday nights. So we were doing one show one day a week, and it was like on our free time. And sometimes I would check out for days at a time, not know what's going on. Now it's a full-time job. So, you know, yeah, it's not like a real job, but I work like so much.
Do you ever miss those early days when it was like you had to squeeze it in between shifts and all yeah. that? Do you ever have nostalgia?
I do. I have nostalgia for it. But when I go back and listen to that, I'm like, oh, my God. Well, some of the jokes, it's like they were funny 8 years ago and they were fresh 8 years ago. Now they're like old. And so it's like, oh, God, this like rolling your eyes like this joke again. But it's also like some of our political positions were just kind of boneheaded because
well, we were libertarians at that point.
We were like racist libertarians. Legitimately, we were. But we were learning. And we also like there was like hints.
Now you're just racists.
Well, right.
I'm joking, obviously.
Yeah, we shedded the libertarian part of that. That was just more pure. Right? No other ideologies get in the way.
So I'm joking.
Well, yeah, but we had some bad takes because of that. We had some GOP plan trusting that. I mean, look, we didn't really catch on to Trump until like 2018. We caught on to him. If you listen, it's a mixed bag because there are times when we were like really coping and there were other times when we were like, this guy, get this guy. This.
I remember you starting to turn against him in when he did the Syria strike, which I think was April of 2017.
And then we did it again in April of 2018 when he hit them again. It was again. Like we always were like contingent on Trump doing things that we wanted. Like we were never, even when we supported Trump, we were never like fanboys. We were never like Trump can do no wrong. I was like, no, Trump can do and does a lot of wrong. And my thing was still like, I felt like up until about 2018, I was like, we can still influence him. Like we can still push him to do what we want through pressure and things like this, you know, saying things online and whipping up memes and getting people to call into the White House and such like that. As it turned out, that was all just wrong. I mean, it was a good faith effort, but as it turned out, like he was completely controlled by the Kushner family, among others, and their sort of extended family, if you will, the Kushner and their sort of large extended family, if you will, like he was just in their pockets the whole time, and so you know you get. But it's funny because I had already been. If you go and listen to us from like 2014. You will hear us completely not interested in the GOP. Like we thought they were, we didn't like them. We had nothing but disdain for them. And so Trump kind of like sucked us back into it. And then when he won, I was like, oh my, I can't believe this guy actually won. And then we were like kind of on and off until 2018, like after the midterms. And then he did this thing like he's going to shut down the government in order to get money for the wall. And then he just turned the government. After they shut down the Mueller probe, he turned the government back on without getting any money out of Congress after 3 weeks. And I was like, all right, this guy. And his excuse, he didn't have a good excuse for it. He just signed all the legislation that they were putting in front of him.
It was just one disappointment after another. And you gradually realize, you know, he'd seemed like such a tough guy, like a juggernaut prior to getting into office. Right. And then once he's in office, it's just one defeat. And he's realized again and again, you're forced to realize, oh, he's not doing that. He's not doing that. And he's not doing that. And maybe this. No, not even that. And it was just endless.
And up until
the very end.
Yeah. And the terms completely changed. Like by the time 2020 rolled around, like we had been well off the Trump train. And so none of that was like anything. We didn't really want anything to do with that. But the terms of the debate had totally changed over those 4 years. I mean, Trump in 2016 and 2015 was like kind of like a civic nationalist with like heavy dog whistles towards pro-white stuff, which I was like, that is a huge, vast improvement over what we usually get with conservatives and certainly liberals. It's a vast improvement in U.S. politics generally. Like a civic nationalist who is not a conservative. But is actually like a civic nationalist. Yeah, that's better than a conservative. And obviously, like a white nationalist would be best. But, you know, you would take the civic nationalist that sort of dog whistles to white interests as a huge improvement. And so we did, but it was all like smoke and mirrors. And then by the time 2020 rolled around, like, he's worse than conservatives. Like, his politics were like worse. He's like pro gay, pro black. He puts out this plan to give blacks like $500 billion, let them all out of prison. And the movement that grows up around Trump got more and more and more toxic. Like, it was sort of interesting. Like, we had our clashes with the alt-light back then, but we had a dialogue with them. You know, we had like a dialogue, like we had back and forth with them and such. And there were people that hated my guts and I didn't like them, but you know, we had some sort of, there was some mutual respect between some characters and there was some back and forth there. Now, all of the people that are in like the Trump political sphere, they're all like, one, most of them are black or gay, and they're all just like utter shills. And as we found out, like, many of them were recruited from like modeling websites. Like, they're not even political. Like, they're literally just models that were hired to do this.
Yeah. And then there's the Turning Point USA thing, which just feels, right. I mean, do you think that Trump was ever, do you think that he ever cared about white America?
No.
No, right. So it was just an electoral strategy.
It was an all-in act. He's an actor. He's a very good actor. He's better than people give him credit for. He's not stupid.
No. I mean, it's interesting to see him now that he's out of power. He just seems. And do you think he will stand? Run for office in 2024?
No, he's grifting. Like, he's just taking money from people. He just wants you to give him money. Like, literally, he didn't spend any of that Stop the Steal money on actually any. Now, those lawsuits were meritless, but he didn't spend any of the money that people gave. I mean, he was taking people's donations, not telling you that, like, there was a recurring payment on your card. And there were, like old ladies on Social Security who were, like, absolutely desperate because they wanted America back, and they thought Trump was going to give it to them, and they thought this election had been stolen from him. And he's just, like, dinging their credit cards. And like, it's just disgusting. It's really just reprehensible behavior.
Yeah, it is. It should be shameful. I mean, I've seen things from him now, you know, about taking credit for the vaccine, for example, and boasting how great it is. We'd be millions of people would be dead if it weren't for the vaccine that we brought them, and we Trumpians should take credit.
That's
for
not
them.
Really going over well for him, though.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, there are people that broke with us because we refused to support Trump, and they've been very much aggressively against COVID and the vaccine and stuff. And I'm like,
yeah. And now he is doing this. I mean, it's fucking weird. I think maybe he's trying to appeal to boomers who are more worried.
I think they're COVID. Just telling him to say it.
Yeah.
Telling him to say it.
I mean, you know that they were telling him that not to join Gab. You know,
thing because he had a Gab account and he doesn't post there. He for a little while like reposted certain things there, I think, but he never posted there because yes, they told him not to do that because that would basically give Gab a lot of eyes on it and therefore a lot of money. Andrew Torba would make a lot of money, which he would deserve from that, and then he would grow stronger. And it would be harder for the Kushner, large extended Kushner family to, that's what I'll use from, that's the euphemism I'll run with, the Kushner extended family. It would be hard for the Kushner extended family to shut him down if he had like an influx of money and then support. Like they do want to shut him down. I will give Andrew Torba all the credit in the world for standing up to them. He really deserves it.
Oh, absolutely. He's put on a heroic effort for quite a few years now, and especially more recently.
Yeah.
So at this point, would you say that Trump is just something that needs to be got out of the way? Or he's a sort of a block on any progress?
Yeah, for sure. No, he is. He is. I think, though, he's increasingly fading into the background. Like, the Stop the Steal stuff, I knew that always had a limited lifespan because I was like, it's not going to work. Like, he's not going to be president. Like, anybody that there were some people, nobody really in our thing, even if they did think the election was stolen, none of them really felt like there was any actual hope that it would get overturned and go back to him. And so only the most gullible people thought that. And like we said, Trump robbed those people blind, and that's shameful. You shouldn't take advantage of naive people. That's an evil thing to do. But once it was definite that wasn't happening, it was like, what are you going to do? Like, you're going to keep saying it? Like, it's just, there's nothing to do there, right?
Well, I mean, it's quite amazing how far people went to keep believing it. Now, I'm an outsider to all of this. I'm definitely no kind of expert in American politics or the Constitution. But from outside, it seemed like, because from what I was hearing, it seemed like there was hope. It was reasonable to keep hoping that he could turn things around at the start of January. But of course, that never happened. But what is amazing is the sheer force of like cult like belief of the Q-tards, the QAnon believers. That I believe that some of them even now believe that he's the secret president or something. Is that a meme or is that actually real?
That was going on like early 2021. I haven't seen much of it recently, frankly. They have moved on. Most of those people have moved on to talking about COVID and vaccine stuff. Takes up all their time now.
Right.
So they don't really do the Trump still won and stuff, and now they're just mad at him because he told them all to get booster shots.
Well, I mean, it must feel like a real fucking betrayal. I'm not surprised.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're those people and you've put all of this stuff into it and then you got really big on board this thing and you're the only ones left loyal to him, and then he says this to you, it's like...
It's like he did this time and again, though, with different issues where he would betray his own base.
Yes.
Like, in order to get the approval of his enemies, presumably, or people who were never going to vote for him in large numbers, like Black Americans, you know.
Crazy. Yeah, he was able to get a small amount of Black Americans, and the GOP is going to increasingly get Black votes, and they're going to increasingly get. They've actually already increasingly been getting. And I got pushback for saying this, like 2 years ago. I was like, look, the GOP is going to be able to get so-called Hispanic, or we call them mestizo, whatever, like mixed race, South American Indian and white people, Stryker hates the word Latino, but there's no better real word for that. That's kind of what people understand. Mixed race South American Indians. They are going to vote for him. Or not him. They're going to vote GOP. Like, they increasingly have been. And in some states, they've actually made the difference. Like, in the recent Virginia gubernatorial election, they came in huge for the Republican Party. So, and it's not because they're conservative. It's not because they're like natural conservatives. That was what the George W. Bush Republican Party used to try and tell you, that these Latinos or South American immigrants are natural conservatives. Like, they're not. I was like, in terms of social conservatism, the only people that are truly socially conservative, meaning, as Kurt Doolittle likes to say, a moral middle class, are white people. Right? These are people that are just getting pandered to.
Well, had
a pander to them.
Yeah. Well, it's a way of keeping them quiet, keeping them pliant. It's just you get the same thing in Britain, where politicians will continually claim to care about certain things just to keep what would be called Middle England asleep. And that's happened for years.
I was talking about the actual like immigrants themselves, like the Mexicans and the South American immigrants.
Oh,
they themselves are actually turning conservative. Not conservative, they're Republican, if you will. And the funny thing is the Trump movement made the GOP considerably less socially conservative. Like, they brought in a lot of multiracial stuff and a lot of the pro-trans stuff. And they have like a lot of tranny people that are, I don't know if I'm allowed to use that word, transsexuals, shall we say, that were themselves very pro-Trump. So,
I mean... Is that because of the like Trump himself, or is it because the GOP wanted to pander to his enemies?
It's the movement around him. It's not just him himself, but it's like the people around him, like the Steve Bannons and Roger Stones, and the people kind of running the Trumpist online movement have decided that this was the kind of the coalition they want. Steve Bannon even said it. We showed video on our show like from last year of him touring colleges, telling you the coalition he wanted to build, and it included Blacks and Hispanics and homosexuals and transsexuals and stuff. And he wanted to build this giant, multiracial and also apparently multi lifestyle coalition of the working class, as he called it. That's what they wanted to build. But in the process, they've thoroughly alienated all but like really like the idea that Trump has his finger on the pulse of white America, it's just not true anymore. He's got a very small and extremely extremely dug in population people, but even they're abandoning him over the COVID stuff. I mean, that's a very recent development because they couldn't ignore it anymore. He's been saying this stuff for a long time, but they could no longer ignore it as of like last week. And you've seen like Ben Garrison did a cartoon calling him out, and others have. And, you know, people who've tied their horse to that pole or whatever, like, you know, they've hitched their horse to that wagon. Like they're going to have a tough time dealing with that.
Yeah, they're going to feel betrayed. I mean, I guess that it might have become more of a salient issue for them because of the vaccine side effects or the talk about the booster shot, that kind of thing. I don't know.
Well, it just doesn't work. I mean, my thing on that is like it's just not working. Like it's obvious that it doesn't prevent you from getting sick. So what is the point of it?
Well, someone has asked the question, actually. I was going to keep it since it's now come up.
Well, I'll answer any questions. I'm not going to respond to shit. We'll answer questions.
No. Don't worry. It's can Mike expand on his positions on the vax, lockdowns, and the NJP stance? There's been a lot of disinfo going around recently about the NJP TRS being pro-vax, despite publishing multiple articles questioning the narrative and hosting IRL events without masks. So could you expand on the positions of the lockdown?
Well, we've actually, funny enough, at some of our events, we've told people, like, obviously you can if you want to. And we've also had people have them in their pockets in case, like, the police came. You know what I mean? But that was when there were mask mandates. As right now, only mask mandates in a few states. Like, the state I'm in, there's definitely not one. And I just drove through 5 states to go visit relatives for Christmas, and there's nobody's wearing a mask. Okay, like just nobody. Like maybe you'd see. We were in this really crowded tourist town a couple days ago, and there was maybe like 5 people I saw that were masked. Like, and there was like hundreds of people wandering the streets.
All right, my position seems like it's very different in America compared to over here.
I think it is very different compared to Europe, and so Europeans are sometimes confused by how sort of not alarmed some Americans are about it. And that's because my position is the vaccine is not, I don't know about side effects and things. I only like to go on what I know, and I haven't done a lot of the research that some have done. I don't doubt it, but I haven't done it. But what I can say for sure is my belief is that it does not work. It will not prevent you from getting an infection. Therefore, inherently it is unjust to make somebody take a medical treatment against their will. It doesn't work. I mean, against their will, but even if it worked, it'd still be bad, but it's doubly bad because it doesn't work. And I don't think I really need to go any further than that, right? Like, that's my position. Right now in the United States, there are no lockdowns. There just aren't. And Biden said today that COVID is an issue that the federal government can't decide. It's up to the states. He said that. He made that statement today. He said that. Which is a serious walk back of federal authority. And my suspicion is that because his vaccine mandate has been meeting a lot of resistance in the courts and is going to be heard by the Supreme Court on January 7th. The Biden vaccine mandate is before the Supreme Court on January 7th. And there's 25 states and several big business entities and business coalitions that are challenging it because they don't want to do it. So I think one thing that people have told me about Europe is that all the parties seem to be in lockstep on COVID stuff. They're not in America. The Republican Party, funny enough, is more anti-COVID than Trump. They have fought this issue, and they have won. They have won in court multiple times. They got the vaccine mandate was the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals put a stay on it. And it is now, they put a stay on it, and they're now going to put the decision before the Supreme Court on the 7th. And the Supreme Court, now I don't know what they're going to decide, but I will say that they have shut down federal things that Biden has done for COVID before. And the New York Times is predicting that they are going to shut it down, that there will be no federal mandate after the Supreme Court decision at the beginning of January. I can't say because I don't know. That's what the New York Times is predicting. I think they have a pretty good idea. So that's kind of my position is like, yeah, I'm against it, but I also want people to understand. I want to give people the good news that it's actually in America. I can't speak to Europe. I'm sure it's terrible. in America, it's not necessarily as bad as you might think. And if your workplace or your office is telling you to get it, I would say hold fast, don't get it, but do not quit and don't let them push you around, because it is not on nearly the solid ground that you might think it is. And if you're reading and looking at a lot of doomsday stuff about it, you might be convinced like, oh my gosh, like this is, I'm going to lose my livelihood over. Don't assume it. That's my position. I just try and tell people like, hold fast. Don't really worry about it. Look, it might come down to it. I can't tell you if it will or won't, but I'm telling you, it's not so cut and dry. And there's a lot of companies that are very, very worried about whether they have the legal right to do this to you. So make them more worried about it. Say like, I'm not doing it. And if you want to let me go, well, you're going to hear from my lawyer. And then I will bet you they're not going to bother you again. I know that doesn't apply to Europe. I'm sure that it doesn't apply to Europe. But in America, it is not so cut and dry as that. So I just try and kind of give people a little bit of a white pill, if you will, on it. Like, it's not necessarily as bad as you think it is. And certainly, I don't support people being forced to get vaccinated at their workplace or threatened with losing their livelihood over it. I never have. And anyone saying so is lying. And additionally, I know who some of those people saying those lies are. They're Trump supporters. Go talk to your boy. Don't come to me. Go talk to your boy.
All right. Okay. There are some related questions. Do you see COVID-19 and the Great Replacement and the Great Reset as separate or intimately connected issues? But it seems like, do you want to say something about that? I think
I think that they're separate issues. I think that the Great Reset, it's important to understand what we're talking about, because with all of these stuff, there's a lot of different things. Like, there's some people who say the Great Reset is Bill Gates like vaccinating, like killing African children as part of some global population reduction scheme. Well, if you listen to what they talk about at Davos, that's not what they say. At Davos, they talk about things like getting rid of all labor protections, borderless free trade, gig economy work, cloud, like all computing in the cloud, right? Things like that. Like, basically getting rid of borders in any way they can, even the border of your own personal computer for your own data, right? So they want things like every worker is a gig worker, every computer is a cloud computer, you know, that kind of stuff. Sort of, and it's very creepy and weird stuff, right? But that is not really, that's what they mean. That's what Davos means by the Great Reset. They're talking about these economic issues. I oppose all of that. And I've talked ad infinitum about all that. What's hilarious is, now maybe not so much the cloud computing, but certainly like the borderless free trade and the getting rid of labor protections, that's all Republican Party stuff. So when conservative politicians come and they start, like Glenn Beck is coming out with a book now about the Great Reset, right? Well, Glenn Beck, do you support labor unions? Do you support labor protections at all? Do you support worker protections at all? Do you support, like, do you like the Uber model, right? Like, you like this model. Everyone's their own boss. Get the hell out of here, right? Like, you have no protection in that environment. That's the environment which they can make you get vaccinated, because then somebody else can just come right in and pick up your job, right? So it's important to understand that. So there's weird conspiracy stuff like, oh, they want to kill all the African babies or something. Again, the way they talk about it, it's important to see this. They shift the blame. Who's the blame? Who's the boogeyman? Klaus Schwab. He's not a member of the Kushner extended family. Bill Gates, not a member of the Kushner extended family. Who are the victims? Blacks. So the reality is, the Great Replacement, who's doing it? It's the Kushner extended family. And who are the victims? Whites. In the Great Reset, who are the people responsible? It's Gentiles, and the victims are Black. Think about that. In their version of it. Now, I talk about the Great Reset in terms of these sort of economic reforms that they want to do, which we, of course, oppose. That is linked to the Great Replacement. That is linked to deracinating white people in their own countries and bringing in immigrant labor, removing, because labor unions for a long time were a big impediment to immigration, right? In the U.S., certainly, all the anti-immigration laws, the anti-Cooley laws, the anti-Chinese laws, that was all labor unions. In California, no less, 100 years ago in California, labor unions were so strong that they are passing laws against coolie labor, which is like Chinese.
Yeah. Indian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were saying about.
So these things are related. Like, the economic I don't see the problem is a Great Reset. It's also like a trigger word in your brain, right? It hits you in your brain. Like, oh, Great Reset. They are trying to, and you've seen, interestingly, I've seen them doubling down with that language at the same time that they're getting people to be like opposed to it, but they're doing the bait and switch because the Great Replacement is the issue. Now you'll get banned from the internet for talking about the Great Replacement from a lot of places. You won't for talking about the Great Reset. Now, obviously, I think that those kinds of economic plans and reforms that they do, that they really talk about at Davos, they don't talk about like killing off the continent of Africa. Like they don't. like they just don't. No. You know, which is that's what you get from Alex Jones and those types when they talk about it. Like Alex Jones has been talking about Bill Gates wants to kill every African for like 10 years. And we used to laugh about it because it's so stupid. If anything, the real conspiracy there is that he's making them more fit. And therefore, they're reproducing at a greater rate than white.
Yeah, and then coming
that's
up
a worse
Europe.
Thing.
Yeah,
and they're coming to Europe. Yes, yeah. They're already here. Forget about it. Forget America. They're already well here. But then they're sending them into Europe. So I think,
Well, would you say then that the people responsible for the Great Reset are a different group of people from those responsible for the Great Replacement?
I just don't like the term Great Reset. I think it's a very distracting term. I mean, I understand that it's a term that they use.
Yeah.
But I think it is literally an earworm so that you don't talk about Great Replacement. But ultimately, it's one program. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, the Great Reset, it's Davos, right? It's the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
Right? Now, these are the people you'll own nothing and you'll like it, right?
Exactly.
Now, that kind of an economic program, which they've been doing for a long time, and they've been doing that through things that conservatives support, the kinds of economic reforms that conservatives support. Remember, like no labor protections, gig economy. Dude, in America, the Republican Party absolutely loves this Uber model, even though Uber is once run by another one of Kushner's, long extended cousins. Please don't take that literally. I'm saying they're all of the same ethnic group. The Kushner ethnic group, right?
Distant cousins.
Distant cousins. Probably they are distant cousins. But yes, they were very supportive of this. And libertarians were very supportive of this type of model because they're like, everyone's their own boss. You don't have to deal with an office and coworkers.
This is how different types of politics are seduced by globalism. Because yes. it suits the libertarian, it suits the conservative, it suits the lefty
in different ways, right?
Yeah,
there's different types of the globalist agenda that can appeal to all these different kinds of groups. And so, what I try to do is bring some clarity to the whole issue, so you can see like the bigger picture and understand whatever the word you want to use. We are nationalists, okay? We are racial nationalists. We are pro-white nationalists. We want white people to have a place, a home, where they will have political power and the ability to make decisions for their own lives. So they won't have to be subject to great replacements, great resets, vaccination mandates, whatever it might be. They can make those decisions themselves. That's the most important thing. So playing like the buzzword stuff can get distracting. And I know that, and they're putting these out there on purpose. Like I saw this letter from some UK politician. It was something in the news where they got a letter from like Klaus Schwab or something like that about come be part of the Great Reset. The Great Reset is happening. You can be part of the Great Reset. Do the Great Reset. Come be the Great Reset. I'm like, that is some MK Ultra crap. Now that's not a conspiracy. MK Ultra is absolutely real. The idea of like programming you with a keyword to get a certain kind of response, that's real.
Yeah, and neuro-linguistic programming, I think it's called. That was in Holland. It was the Netherlands. It was a Dutch politician, I'm pretty sure, who got that letter, and the one that you're talking about.
That is NLP to the max, which is what MK Ultra really is. MK Ultra is just a CIA neuro-linguistic programming experiment. How do we use words to make people get certain emotional responses? And I'm telling you,
it's fucking eerie.
When I see that, I'm like, dude, I see what they're doing. Because they want people saying Great Reset. They don't want you saying Great Replacement.
No, they want to say that the Great Replacement is a conspiracy theory. Yeah. But they also sometimes say that the Great Reset is a conspiracy theory.
They say that it is. But there is a conspiracy theory of the Great Reset. What they don't tell, what they do is they come up with this kooky stuff, and then people get focused on that. But what I'm saying, like, what do they really talk about at Davos? It doesn't really have to do with like population reduction. It has to do with like globalism, just global economic reforms and countries breaking down trade barriers and like, you know, expanding trade. And really they're very much into this. You'll own nothing, like no, like all property will be rental. All jobs will be gig.
Yeah, it's, about, it's a new economic, exactly. It's a new economic model. And that's what is so interesting and scary about it, is that no one really knows what it is. That's the thing.
And they can't, and they don't have power to change it. Like, because if the people that run the economic, the world, and the World Economic Forum is just one of the places they do this. That one, they've almost singled it out to be the thing, because it's like Klaus Schwab, he's German, he stands up there, and like, you know, whenever I see Alex Jones do this, he puts a picture of this guy who's standing there talking in this German accent, and he says he's a Nazi.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know. I've seen things like this. And it's like,
look, whatever people think about the National Socialists, they were not globalists.
No. they were the opposite. And they also weren't nihilists. I mean, whatever you think about National Socialism, at least it's an ideology.
It's an ethos, right? At least it's an ethos, right?
Yeah. What you've got with Klaus Schwab and so on is just a belief in nothingness.
Why don't you show the pictures of Burning Man dressed like a woman? Have you ever seen those?
Oh, I don't think that's.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I fell for a meme then. All right,
I'd love it to be true, but I don't think
I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know.
I mean, the pictures of J. Edgar Hoover on the beach, you know, which we don't need to go further. Like, those are real.
Well, I mean, I'd love it to be true, but I'm going to assume that it isn't just now. Until further evidence emerges.
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, a lot of elite people have these weird.
Well, indeed. I mean, that's emerged over the last few years.
And who knows how much Jeffrey Epstein. That's the other thing. What happened to Jeffrey Epstein?
Oh, God. Well, then there's Ghislaine Maxwell, of course.
The trial was, like, totally, totally covered up.
And Twitter banned an account, Ghislaine Maxwell updates or trial updates. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And they banned it. The day they banned it, the tweet that he had put out, this is crazy, the tweet that he had put out was when he said that it was revealed in court that when the FBI, after Jeffrey Epstein's death, you know, assuming he died. Yeah, I'm not averse to certain types of paranoid conspiracies myself, my friend. I just want them to make sense. Yeah. That, you know, assuming he died, when they went to his mansion or whatever, and they went to seize a bunch of his records and computers and things like that, there was bins there that were already had FBI identification tags on them from the last time he was arrested. So all this stuff had been in the federal government's possession and was returned to him. And he didn't even bother to remove the FBI identification tags from some of this evidence. And this came out in court. And when that account tweeted that out, banned.
Yeah. Imagine being that complacent, though. I mean, imagine being Epstein feeling, I don't even need to take off the FBI.
I'm going to take off the FBI tags off my crates of incriminating evidence on political and business figures from around the world. Like, I don't need to do that, because what does it matter? They can't touch me.
It's incredible.
But look, thank you, FBI, for having such a good, convenient filing system. I don't have to do this work myself now.
Yeah, I'll just...
You've already collated this.
Put those FBI crates with the rest of the incriminating evidence.
FBI's already collated all this evidence for me. Like, I have a nice, good indexing system I can work with. I don't need to develop my own system.
Anyway, right. there are loads of questions for you. So I've just had a look, and I realized that this is, I think this happened the last time you were on it, so we ended up going quite a long time. All right. White Ikes, I haven't seen him for quite a while. He says, love National Justice. Would really like to know how one might get involved. And great work as always, Woz. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to get vetted, because we are currently vetting people into it for attendance at National Justice Party meetings. And so basically send an email to the support email on the rightstuff.biz. That will be the best email. We have an email address on the nationaljusticeparty.com. You could try that one. I would try both. and see which one gets a response first. We got people on both, but I will admit we were not quite up on our game with responding to the emails to the nationaljusticeparty.com site. And we also had a not great email service for a few months there. And we've had to also, as you know, problems that we have in this business with keeping services and keeping stuff online. So we had to switch email servers and a couple of times, as you can guess. And so, So I think we've got guys, I'm pretty sure I know exactly who it is, the guy who's answering those emails. So you could try either one. And what you'll basically be asked is like, what's your region? And then you'll get in contact with the guy who is doing the vetting for that region. And then he'll schedule a talk with you and try and figure out, like, you know, where you're coming from and such like that. Because we do have to protect the security of our events and the people we've already brought in. And I know it's frustrating to some people, but we do have a very good track record of not having big problems. We've had six big events.
Yeah, I mean, something I would point out is that whenever you start a big project, especially one that involves multiple people, but even one that you're just doing on your own, there are always teething troubles at the start. I mean, even with Millennial this year, the first few streams I was making mistakes that I didn't even know that I was making. And you obviously learn as you go. Ideally, you learn fast. And but some people don't realize that you've already fixed the problem. So they keep talking about it.
It's true. It's like, I had a problem last year. It's like, well, we covered that. But
yeah.
Our fans are pretty good. We had all the problems. We've had all the problems that are endemic to internet politics and things like that. And I feel like we've managed to nonetheless cultivate a group of people that are just great people, that are really great to be around, that are really rational, sane people that are happy to, you know, be part of the thing, don't want to just do like this sniping back and forth and all the kind of drama stuff, and are more interested in the politics and the ideology of it and things like that. So we've really cultivated a great group of people, and people want to be part of it, because whenever we have a meeting and we put out the videos of the meetings, people are like, I have to be at the next one. And, you know, the thing about NJP is, yes, there are growing pains, but we kind of did our growing pains and then we founded the NJP. Not to say that like everything NJP has done is perfect, far from it, but we have done a lot and we have learned from Charlottesville and all the other things that went on over the last several years, like a good strategy, how to organize, how to get people together, how to hold events, the best way to avoid problems like Antifa, and like the conspiracy Charlottesville lawsuit and things like that, how to avoid getting trapped up in that kind of stuff, how to prevent yourself from getting trapped, things like that. And Patriot Front also, who I'm not involved with, but I am friends with them, has also done a very good job at avoiding that stuff, even if it means sometimes you don't hit back. I mean, they got criticism for that, but I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, they had shields. But they were letting those, if they had a Philly demonstration where like some blacks surrounded them and were punching at them and they were just blocking them and stuff. You know, conservatives were making fun of them and stuff, like, don't these guys know how to fight? And I'm like, they do, but they're also not stupid. They know what's going to happen to them if one of them punches a black person. Are you kidding me? They don't want to go to jail for life.
Yeah.
It's stupid to do it. So just play defense and understand how they're manipulating the rules. Like, after Charlottesville, we understood you don't get to have a fair fight.
No, definitely not.
You don't get to have a fair fight.
Okay, I want to move on to the next question, because otherwise we'll be here for hours and hours, because there are so many. Because people love you. It's quite clear. There's a lot of love here. I hear some of your network throwing out the accusation that China is working to genocide whites. Where is the evidence for this?
I am just going to put a question mark there, because I don't promote that narrative. I'm not sure that there is now FTN has done a significant amount of work to talk about connections between Jewish business elites in America and Chinese, the Chinese Communist Party, and also Chinese business elites in China. That's, I mean, perhaps on like a long enough timeline, you could say that, but generally speaking, that is, I don't think that they would phrase it that way. And I don't know. I don't know where you're getting that from.
Yeah, this sounds like this would have to be a question that was put to the people who were saying that, because you don't know everything that's going
on. Well, or it could be a misinterpretation of some stuff that people are saying. You know, I'm not saying that. Now, I do say that much of the anti-China rhetoric you see coming out of America now is a bit of a smokescreen. There are a lot of ties. A ton. Obviously, our imports are like almost all from China. So when a bunch of politicians start talking about China, I'm like, well, who let them take over our imports?
Yeah.
If you wanted to do something, you couldn't, because they own your ass. Because people go, if they decide, like, oh, yeah, you want to mess with us? Well, guess what? Americans don't get anything at the store anymore. Now what are you going to do?
I mean, I can remember RoboCop 2, which was 1990, and they're saying, we're going to make Made in America mean something again. That was the sort of slogan in that. And this has been going on for a very fucking long time.
And they just lie about it. Like, Trump had his crap made somewhere other than America, and they basically, like, the tag itself was the part that was made in America. Like, just the tag. You know, so, yeah.
That's a good indication of the sort of shallowness of the whole Trump thing. It's just, like,
I don't even know that symbolic. That's just a rumor, but like that's kind of like an example. But yes, I do know that much of his merch was not made in America. Yeah.
All right. Okay. And then that same person says, these individuals also throw out the accusation that everywhere in the world is being taught to hate white people. Living in Japan, I can tell you that isn't the case. They are taught to criticize themselves. And in Singapore, they are taught Chinese privilege. Fucking hell.
You would have to have the discussion with whoever it is that you're talking about. If you're talking about Jazz Hands and Fascination, I think you might be mischaracterizing some of what he's saying. It could also be that, there are, for example, at the Chinese universities, there is increasing Holocaust education, and there is increasing amounts of like many wealthy Jews are funding Jewish studies departments at some major Chinese universities. This has been going on for a long time, but I don't think that Chinese, in fact, many Chinese, if you're asked, like, you know, the best way to know the place that hates white people the most is like America. And then second is Europe. Now, I'm not saying but I'm saying those are the places where you get the most intense anti-white stuff. Other people don't get it nearly as intensely, and it's because of who's controlling their media apparatus and who's controlling their educational apparatus and things like that. And so, yeah, generally speaking, the funniest thing is there are places where whites aren't controlling it, but neither is neither is the tribe. And so as a result, like, there's actually just rational, reasonable takes on white people and often a lot of respect given to them. But it's the places where you have the tribe is controlling the media that and the educational apparatus that the anti-whiteness is the most out of control.
Right. Okay, we'll move on to the next one. Hold on a second. Oh, please have Mike tell Sven to accept Entropy for subscriptions. I was going to get onto that at the end.
Yeah, we should try that, yeah.
As I heard that you're relying entirely on crypto for donations. Is that true?
No, not entirely. Right, okay. We also have eCheck, which is admittedly not a great system, but you can also mail us money, and people do. I know the mail system says, oh my God, actually go to the post office. What year do you think this is? But yes, no, people do. About half of our subscriptions come in through the mail.
Right. Okay.
It feels kind of like old school, right?
Yeah, it does.
And that one they can't ever shut down. Well, I mean, not gonna
work. Yeah. Okay. A pandemic of the melanated says,
Okay.
Happy New Year, Mike and Woz. Puritans have long subverted our institutions. Central banking, usury, feminism, porn, communism, transgenderism, transhumanism, great replacement, and great reset. John Calvin has a lot to answer for. Puritans must be dealt with. Okay, thank you for that one. Very good.
No, he's a joke. It's a joke.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, who he's referencing, right?
I know.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Okay. We're not completely blue-pilled. I do know this. Okay. Croatian Idiot says, Mike, two questions. Do you work out? And when will you have Andrew Joyce on your show?
Oh, man. Well, one, I was working out fairly regularly, and I got COVID. And I will admit that I have not – that was in, like, September. I have been extremely lazy since about September. And my girlfriend is absolutely on my case about it. She is breaking my balls daily about my lack of hitting the weights. And so I have to – it is going to be forced on me in the new year no matter what. So, yes. But I had plans to have Andrew Joyce on, and then we just lost contact. I've got to email him again. I love Andrew Joyce. I love all of his work. He's a great guy. The few conversations I've had with him, I've been great. And really fascinating work he's done. He hit like a lot of hard times, and he's having a bunch of issues, and I don't want to reveal anything about him, but what he was telling me is that it's very difficult for him. And he also has just had problems. So I was understanding, and then like we had an appointment, and it kind of came and went, and we both seem to have forgotten about it, and I've got to get back in touch with him. I want to have him on if he's still game.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Glenn the Chinaman says, I hear from Japanese, Australians, and Canadians that there is a plan for Chinese mass migration to take over their countries. However, the Chinese aren't the majority of immigrants in these countries. They receive people from all around the world. I don't think the goal is a Chinese majority, but to have no ethnic majority in Canada, Australia, etc.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, well, one thing I would say, though, to that is that at least in Australia and in the western parts of Canada, and what was the other country?
Japan.
Okay, well, I can't speak to Japan because I don't know much about it. But I know that in Australia and in western Canada, the Chinese are organized ethnically. So while there is this general idea of open borders that is being pushed in the west by our favorite tribe of wonderful people, that the Chinese themselves can take advantage of that because they will operate ethnically. Like they will work together on an ethnic basis. And that's just a winning strategy for life. So if you think that, you know, if you think that that particular tribe of people is invincible, they're not. Ethnic solidarity is what does it. And so, and even though I don't think that the Chinese are in like a direct opposition to them, the very fact that we can openly talk about the Chinese and nothing happens to us, whereas we have to beat around the bush talking about this other group, kind of tells you what's going on. But the Chinese do work in an ethnically solid way, but they just want to make money. So they don't really care very much about the schemes of that other group. They're not really that, they don't care about their social issues and the other stuff. They're just in those countries to make money, get real estate and further themselves. And they do work together. So they seem to have a leg up and they seem to probably be more pervasive, like certainly simply because of IQ, they're also going to be more pervasive in educational institutions. Like if you go to college, if you're going to a good college, you're going to see a lot more Chinese faces than black faces, even though there's probably as many immigrants from like Somalia or something. But if you're going to like a good university in Australia, you're just going to see more Chinese than Somalians. Unless they find a way to fix it. Believe me, they're good. They're hard at work on that one.
But, yeah. Oh, someone says, I like Mike, what's not to like? Is that a common phrase?
Well, I hope so.
Okay. All right. He then says, hey, Mike, can you make fun of Warren for sounding exactly like Philip Seymour Hoffman? Thanks, you.
Oh, my gosh. I could, but I'd have to practice it. I'll do that on an upcoming episode of Tedious because I got to practice the Phyllis Seymour Hoffman, but that is extremely good bands. I'm going to do that. Thank you for that.
All right. And
yeah, I'll get to do it. He's the master of impressions. Jesse is the master of impressions, much better than me. I'm okay. He's really good.
He is good at that. Unknown Californian says, Reagan granted amnesty in the 80s. Californians mm-hmm. fought back in 94 with Prop 187 to deny mm-hmm. illegals access to the welfare system, but the court struck it down. Mm-hmm. No appeals were ever made. California is lost now. Another move on the chessboard.
Yeah, he's totally right. There's not really a question there, it's just an accurate statement.
Yeah, I don't really know. Yeah, but well, thank you anyway for that. No, I mean, the story of California is just, you know,
a shame. Beautiful place.
Yeah.
I love California. I've been out there several times, and we actually have a huge, you'd be surprised. We have a lot of, we call them the National SoCalists. Because we have a lot of Southern Californians. And so National SoCalism is definitely a thing down there. And we have a big contingent of guys down there. And of course, we always find a lot of our best guys and our more committed ones come from areas that are like directly under threat. Like we have a ton of people from New York and the Northeast, and we got a lot of guys from California. Right.
Yeah, it must be strange being a nationalist in California. I mean, I can imagine.
There's a lot. Now, there's even like a skinhead scene, and there's like various different kind of white nationalist scenes. There's a lot of white nationalism in Southern California, actually.
All right. Okay. What potential presidential candidate do you see who could galvanize white Americans for 2024?
I mean, just generally speaking? Like not one that I'm supporting, but generally speaking, I don't know, man. I mean, Trump, but I think Trump is kind of, he's kind of burned a lot of clout, unless the people just want to forget again about some of his statements on this stuff and many other statements. I mean, that's not the only thing he said absurd things on, but that seems to be the one that he's actually getting some pushback on. But I would say, I don't know. My thought was like they were gonna run Ron DeSantis, but he's not gonna galvanize anybody. I don't know, man. The GOP, but see the libtards have the same problem. Like, who are they gonna run that's gonna galvanize anybody? When Joe Biden is senile, I don't think he's gonna run again. I think they'll probably just run Kamala Harris or something like that instead of him. I mean, maybe he'll run again. If he is, that's just even more evidence of how decrepit the whole political system is. Literally like this 82-year-old man's only guy in the whole country that could run for president credibly. Exactly. I mean, are you kidding me?
Exactly. I mean, you see
him. You know, old dude is just like this.
Yeah. How is this the best guy in the country?
This is the best one. It's not even like you expect the president to be the best guy, but this is the best guy you could get for that role, the role of which people are groomed for. I mean, Barack Obama, whatever you want to say, he was very convincing. He was good at the role that he had been groomed for, and he had been groomed for it. Like, he first showed up on the scene, the political scene, as a senator from Illinois in like 2002. And then he showed up at the presidential convention to elect the Democratic convention in 2004 to nominate John Kerry to run against George Bush. And he gave the speech there. And that was his like introduction to the country. And then in 2008, he was president. Actually, he might not have even been senator. I don't think he had a Senate term of 6 years. I don't think he even did a full Senate term before he became president. And then they had to replace him with somebody else for Senate. Like he becomes president and they got to do a special election for the 2 years remaining.
Yeah, that rings a bell, actually.
So he was like groomed and they didn't. And the thing is, I was like, I thought they were going to, I saw them grooming him and I was like, I thought they were going to hang on to him a little longer. When they just ran him in 2008, I was like, they're burning this already? I was like, I thought they were going to wait till 2012, 2016 for this guy, you know, like keep him in the hopper a little bit, you know, but they just burned him and he's still young. Relatively for a politician, and so he's just gone. He can't, and it's just like, so now you have this.
That is, he was a weird exception. I mean, I guess Bill Clinton was fairly young as well.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like they were just, the back bench, if you will, I know they use that term in England, was so shallow that they had to, this guy just had to go and take point. Like, he had to be the starting guy off the bench, like, right away, because they didn't have anybody else. And so they said, okay, well, that guy, your last convincing president. He's gone now.
Yeah, it's very strange. And as you say, you've now got Joe Biden, who obviously
he could have been president earlier. I mean, he was a convincing politician in his day, but it's long past his day.
Oh yeah, yeah.
His day was like I was not even born. I'm 44 years old.
Long ago. Yeah, I mean, the guy clearly, you look at him and you just think, okay, so this he belongs in a care home. He should be.
He's senile. He's clearly senile.
Yeah.
It is obvious. And yeah, he's farting all over the place. And people are like, you know, he's farting in China. That's like the big own. Like, all right, Joe Biden went somewhere and farted. I'm like, well, obviously, he's an old man. He's probably not entirely in control of his bowels. And,
you know, it's not the nicest thing to mock him for or whatever. But at the same time, America is being mocked by having this guy as their president. Right. I mean, it's an insult to everyone.
Yeah. Everyone's embarrassed by it, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's kind of embarrassed.
Tam made a donation. Thank you very much. I'd rather not read out that amusing message for optics reasons. But okay. Thank you for the donation.
I know the type. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And Uga Booga says Moik, and with a donation of library credits. Thank you very much. Lord Aragorn says, glad you were on the streets, Mike. No one else had the balls to get offline to do anything following Waukesha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was told in advance that you would want to talk a lot about Waukesha.
Yeah, well, I try not to like harp on it, but yes, I do. I want to just say, like, I think everyone knows what happened in Waukesha. For those that don't, you haven't been paying attention. You had this black guy, obviously influenced by Black Lives Matter, rapped about Black Lives Matter stuff, rapped about wanting to hurt white people, made social media posts about wanting to hurt white people, and then he went and he killed 6 white people, including 1 young boy and 5 elderly people, and 60 others were injured. And some of them are still recovering there in the hospital, etc. So we went and we did the protest there 6 days afterwards to say, you know, to talk about the media cover-up, and it has been a media cover-up. There's no question. And we also then, after we left, after that protest, we left behind our reporter, Trey Garrison, and the Media to Rise guys, you know, who people should know about. Media to Rise, it's a nationalist film collective run by Rob Rondo, who used to do the Rise Above movement, and Luca, I cannot pronounce his last name, I'll have to ask him someday. Luca, his main reporter, Luca, and his cameraman, Mason. These are great guys, and they were there.
Is it Luca Adagio?
No.
Something like that.
No. Oh, it starts with G. It's not, you can go on to media2rise.com and you'll see their names. No, it's not that. But yes, he's the cameraman. He's one of the best photojournalists or video journalists I've ever worked with. He documented an NJP meeting. He's also got other stuff that he documented with NJP prior to that Waukesha protest. At some point, he's going to come out. It's on the back burner now because of all this stuff. And the documentary in which these guys got Daryl Brooks himself, to admit to them that the stories that they were telling in the media, that he was running from a knife fight or running from a domestic incident, and that's why he hit the parade or something like that, which is the media was trying to cover for this guy, so they didn't have to admit that it was an anti-white attack.
Yeah, yeah.
He admitted to them from the jail phone that that's not true. We have it on video, and it's in the documentary.
It's just unbelievable.
Run with this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fox News was there when our guys were there. Fox News was there, not Fox, Fox, some Fox Business News or something like that. Not quite Fox News, but some Fox News channel was there. And all they got was him saying, I'm being dehumanized, and all this other crap. They didn't get any actual meat. No actual journalism was done. We did the journalism. I can't even say we because I didn't do it. They did it. But we, you know, this was a joint effort with NJP and Media to Rise to get this out there, to do, one, the protest, which I thank them for coming down and documenting it. So we got great video of it. We got great pictures. Pictures that the ADL has to use if they want to do an attack piece on us. They're going to hear about that because that's our intellectual property that they're using. But also on top of this, this was what Rob's idea of Media to Rise always was, and this was our idea as well, which is that, look, the biggest error we ever made in 2017, and I can't really say I made it because I was always against it, but it was made, was letting them document us. We need to document ourselves. Put our own image out there, how we want people to see us, the message that we want people to hear, and the images of us that we want people to see. And that's what Luca and Rob and them are doing with Media to Rise, and that's why they're the only people we ever let document NJP meetings and NJP events. And it works, right? We should be our own media in all ways, you know, just like the ADL would never let me and a camera crew come in to their meeting to document it. We should never do that either. Right.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Right.
Yeah. And so, that is definitely something that was learned from the lessons of 2016 and 2017. Boy, was
it. And that's one of the most important ones.
Yeah,
that's the most important one. So yes, so the Waukesha documentary is going to come out in a few days. I just spoke with Rob about it. It's going to be a few more days. We had a fundraiser right before Christmas, and I want to thank everyone. Raised $12,500 for the guys that are doing the documentary. fantastic. Thank everyone that donated. And the documentary is going to be coming out in a couple of days, hopefully. I can't promise it. Rob said maybe. But even if it just doesn't come out till a few days after the new year, that's fine, too, because it should be the best product that it's going to be. So, but it definitely soon. Okay. So, and yeah. So, I mean, in terms of the event of Waukesha, we kind of do know what happened. And we know it was a cover up. And we know it was an anti-white attack. And because of our activism, not just us, but everybody online saying it and repeating the narrative and putting pressure, they had to sort of acknowledge this. And they've done their best to kind of halfway acknowledge it without totally doing it. I mean, Ron DeSantis comes out and he says, well, this guy clearly had anti-white animus. Now, he said that 10 days after the thing happened and 4 days after we did our protest and had also been hitting social media hard with it and conservatives because their media wasn't reporting on it, and we were, well, they were reading our stuff. Yeah. Riker's article has like had like 100,000 views on it because the conservatives don't want to report that. So we do, and then the people who – see, whenever I insult conservatives, always remember, I'm not talking about the people who are basically drinking – you know, they're thirsty, dying of thirst in the desert, and they're drinking from a stagnant pool of water. I'm not talking about those people. Those people, when the information was put in front of them, they gravitate towards it. They want it. They want to see it. They want to know these things, and they understand it. You don't have to convince them that it was an anti-white attack. They know. Believe me, the people in Waukesha know because I spoke with them. They know. So the media is the ones that are lying, and the conservative media, too, putting up this roadblock between people and the right information.
That is sickening that the locals know. But
oh, they know. They know.
The national news comes in and just misrepresents it.
Well, they weren't even talking to them. I had a guy who was there a couple of days after it happened who had gone to check it out. He lived nearby and went to go check it out to see what was going on in the town. He's like, the media is coming. They're unloading their cameras on the main street, doing a 5-minute segment and leaving. They are not asking these people any questions. They don't want to talk to them because they know what they're going to hear. They know what they're going to
hear. Yeah. It's sickening. Sarnunas says, have some neat bucks, chuds. Thank you very much. the therapist says, take this financial gift. Thank you for that financial
Thank
gift.
Thank you. I've been having financial difficulties.
It's 2 LBC credits, so thank you very much.
Just wait.
Right. Well, I'm hoping. Yeah. I'm hoping
that's another thing we could talk about is the fact that literally the U.S. government at the behest of, I'm guessing, you know, YouTube and the people that run YouTube is just trying to tank Library and tank Odyssey. Like, it's not. And even, I mean, it's so clear. It's like, it's really because the cryptocurrency is being used? No, it's because it's an alternative video platform.
Well, they did the same thing with Telegram. In 2018, mm-hmm. I think it was, Telegram was trying to launch its own crypto. I don't know what happened. I don't know the details, but it's interesting.
Well, it's just too fraught to even try it. It's like the regulations. It's just like, forget about it. You're just going to end up in some kind of...
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's terrible. And it's also just like, dude, I even think like Andrew... I've talked about this before, like Andrew Torba and Gap and some of these people that try and do these alternative media platforms and their sites get like flooded with this absolute crap. And you know a lot of it. I mean, the FBI has even admitted to like using Gab to try and like entrap people and stuff. I'm like, at some point, do you have some liability to the owner of that company? Like someone is trying to run a business, a social media company, and you just feel free to just let your agents loose on this thing to just mess with people's brains. Like, who the hell are you? That's not your... It's disgusting. It's like, this is his business. He wants to let people speak freely, and you're just like, oh, well, we're just going to send people just to misrepresent themselves systematically and lie, and just, it's like, just, it's disgusting.
So much of it, like, there's this whole apparatus of lying and misrepresenting that goes on that most people don't even know about.
Yes, and you and me know, because we have been doing this for a while, and we've seen it. It's been targeted at us, it's been targeted at our friends, and you know it when you see it. There's a particular flavor of it that you always can kind of see and tell.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah,
that looks like something that is not. That looks like another op, a gay op.
Exactly. You develop this sense.
I can always tell when there's like people sometimes have legitimate criticisms of others, and I can tell when it's some kind of shill crap. I'm like, get that crap out of my face. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Someone asks, have you had your ranch today?
I have not had any ranch today. I did have a Italian sub with oil and vinegar, but I know that's not quite what you wanted to hear, but yes.
All right, okay. What will be the consequences of January the 6th? How come no one noticed the security allowed the protesters into the building?
Well, a lot of people did notice that, actually. We talked about that. It wasn't so cut and dry. Like, there was a period, like, you will get the video of them, like, fighting the cops and stuff. But if you scroll back, like, 15 minutes, you'll see the cops are, like, welcoming them in, and even sometimes they're, like, corralling them in and such. So it's, I believe that there was a setup there, and there was multiple agencies of the government that were involved in it. And, you know, those people got, I've been at protests before, and when things get heated and rowdy, you go with the flow. When everyone's, you know, people go with the flow, right? Particularly when a whole crowd of people's doing it, you're in the spirit of things. You're like, yeah, let's go, let's do it.
Exactly.
And they just took it. And believe me, the people that are the intelligence agencies and the people that are doing this, they are well acquainted with human nature and how to manipulate it. And they absolutely know how to manipulate people, how to manipulate crowds, how to emotionally mess with people, how to bird dog people, you know, how to just do all kinds of psyops to people. And, you know, this, which again, the problem is, it was a good instinct, right? It was an instinct. It was a revolutionary instinct. It was an instinct. Let's go finally get, you know, it was, I think, honestly, part of January 6th was a humiliation to the left. When was the last time the left went and physically challenged a seat of power?
Yes, exactly. And there's something contradictory.
Some of the leftists were like, actually, like, I actually feel kind of dumb about January 6th because we never did anything like that. Like, right, well, because you're not revolutionaries. You're not against the system. You're just the system janissaries. You don't want to admit it, but you are. And the fact that you hate the people that did go into the Capitol, that you hate them more than anything in your life, that those are the people you have been arrayed against in your political life, that just proves it. It should prove it to you. Not you, obviously, but, you know, them. Like, they're nothing.
And I think they don't really know how to process. Admit that. Yeah, exactly. They don't know how to realize that I am actually an establishment.
I'm just an institutional show. What do I do? Please, someone just isolate that now. Like,
exactly. Obviously, I'm quoting. I'm talking about a hypothetical leftist having a moment.
Well, I do that a lot. Like, I speak in the voice of like the hypothetical leftist or something like that, and then I'm like, oh god, isolate it, put it on the internet. It's never really happened though, because I think people, like, they did this to Molyneux a while ago where he was saying, like, I'm Jewish, I'm the biggest Jew in the world, or something like that. And, like, people were like, listen to this. And I was like, can I get, like, the first 30 seconds of that context, please, so I know, you know, what he's saying?
Oh, yeah. People taking things out of context is like, fuck.
No, that right there is going to get taken out of context.
yeah, it will. You can't say anything, you know. Might as well just...
It actually doesn't really happen. It really doesn't happen that much. It happened to me one time, like, very badly, like, years ago, but that's it. It hasn't happened really since then. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Altmedia 96 asks, are my donations showing? And, well, yes, they are. So don't worry about that. Quebec says, no white guilt. Okay. Thank you for that donation. great millennial. Thank you, Mike, for creating NGP. That's from Spark Schmidt. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And fellow white says, start watching porn. Very good. And there were quite a few more. Mike, can you lower the paywall sub fee from $1,000 a month? My children are starving.
Yeah, well, we're actually thinking about increasing it to $1,000 an hour. So I know it's tough. Our fans are just paupers. We're just putting them into the poorhouse. We don't care. We're just a rapacious capitalist, just charging people without, no, for real, the fee has actually been the same all along. It's $10 a month. If you only want 1 month, it's $14.
Gus Faze also says, NJP, I'm a long-time pay chat. Your Waukesha protest was legit, Mike. Also, respect to Stryker, McNabb, Sven, not so much. Joke, everyone there puts in work. I think he likes Sven just as much as
yeah. No, I know. That's just an old.
Yeah, I know. I remember it.
And people get tired of those memes. Like, people on the internet don't get tired of it because for them it's still funny, but for Sven it's like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's like Sam Hyde once told me that he was very much tired of being portrayed as a terrorist all the time, and I was like, I can see why. I think I can understand.
Yeah, you can.
I was like, I don't think it's gonna change. You know, you're gonna have to just accept it. But you know.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some things that people just latch onto, and then yeah, that's it. Thanks, Woz, for having Mike on your show. That's from Trucker Chris. Thank you. And thoughts on Patriot Front and their recent marches in Philly and DC. Organization and aesthetics, what they do with activism is amazing. And Media to Rise did a great job on showing NGP and Patriot Front. Nationalists are adapting and growing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that Patriot Front is very impressive in what they've done. And it's not something that has ever really... I'm not going to say it's not ever been seen in America, because they're taking on a bit of a sort of a Sons of Liberty aesthetic, which goes back to, you know, the days of the original revolt against the British, but which is on purpose. But it's not something that's been seen in America in a very long time. It almost has a bit of a European flavor to it in terms of how nationalist demonstrations in Europe have gone for a long time. And I really admire them. I mean, when they did their latest, you've probably heard this before, but when they did their latest in DC, they were fed jacketed so hard. It was brutal. It was brutal how badly they were fed jacketed. And it was obviously an op, because the whole conservative media all of a sudden came out with this. And then there was all these shill accounts repeating it and such. And the talking points, I mean, the funny thing about it was the talking points made them look so bad. It was literally like, these guys aren't fat.
Yes.
Who could possibly organize this? Yes. And I'm like, so you're fat and disorganized, and you were never.
Exactly. It was a strange way to attack them, to undermine
them. It's almost like a way to get conservatives to insult themselves too. It's like a double psyop, right? It's like I'm a piece of shit. I can never accomplish anything. So this has to be fake. It's almost like when you once you repeat that, you are that. Like, you have pigeonholed yourself.
Yeah, I expect people on my side to be losers.
We expect that and almost proud of it. Proud of it. No. It's like, and they're like, oh, they couldn't march, and they're like, oh, look, and they've got a guy beating a drum. I'm like, yes, because they're doing a parade.
Yeah,
and they're also the drum is to help the march in time and stuff. I mean, it's like, it's a very impressive show, and they have a lot of guys. I was blown away by the number of people in DC. I couldn't believe it. I was like, that's a lot of people.
And it does seem to be a very demonstration. Yeah, it does seem to be a very well-run organization. It's impressive. Yes. Chavez Garcia says, will you please debate Mr. Wang Lin? He recently made some comments about you and TRS on the kill stream.
Why would I debate a liar?
I've never heard of this person before, so maybe
you can take that W off.
Okay. All right.
He made comments that were not true. Right. I'm saying, if he wants to complain, I'm just saying this to him. If he wants to complain about people that are telling people to get vaccinated, tell him to go talk to his boy Donald Trump.
All right. Sorry, yes, I should have realized.
My only rebuttal to that. Yeah. It's a lie. It's not true. And he can go talk to his buddy Donald Trump, who he spent all this political capital supporting about that, because I'm not the guy.
All right. Okay, NJP is the only party that actually cares about white people, advocates for white people, and takes action for white people. That's ampersand. So, okay. And you made a big impact on me in my early awakening, and I never got to repay you. So here's some Siggy money. This is to me. Thanks for having Mike on. I should say I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. I haven't for quite a week, like a year and a half now. But but I do vape, as you can see. So thank you.
I vaped for a little while, and then I got sick of that too. I was like, it's not, just don't hit. And so now I just don't do any stuff like that. No nicotine products for me.
All right, that's good. Well done. I mean, I'm weirdly giving up smoking was extremely easy, but
because you had the vape.
Well, I for the first few days I didn't. It was about 5 days later that I started vaping. It was a weird experience.
You get the thing where like you suddenly, because I smoked cigarettes for a little while, where suddenly like you sometimes your fingers would start tingling. It's, you're almost getting too much oxygen.
Mm. Like, I don't think I ever had like, that.
But and other people who stopped smoking have told me this too, that like they started to like they started like their lungs started getting better. And they started feeling like I'm like almost like getting too much oxygen now, or I'm not used to it. My body was used to like being short of breath or something. And I don't know what it was, but I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But I noticed I think, whoa, in the last few days. But,
yeah. One thing I have noticed is that I don't have that set sort of tightness in the chest that I used to have when I was a smoker, which I did notice several times. And I remember thinking, fuck, I've really got to stop. You know, that's not right when you're still in your mid-30s to have, like, you know, it's just fucking... So anyway, yeah, you get these moments when you realize I really have to stop. And eventually, it was just a sort of moment of high stress where everything else was in chaos. And I just thought, I could stop now. And I stopped smoking. It was a very strange episode. Anyway, Saltine says, Merry Christmas, Woes. Thank you very much. Winter Phoenix Forest, Kieran, makes a rather surreal super chat, which I'm not sure. I think it might be misinterpreted if I read it out. So you'll have to understand.
That's fine.
Perhaps unwise. Okay. Woes was the first I'd heard of TRS and why I started listening and subscribed 4 years ago.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's
Sanguis et terra. So it's funny the way these things happen. But glad to know that. Thank you for telling us that. The Mike Woes stream is the highlight of my year, and I always buy a cigar just for this.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Respect to both of you. Happy New Year. 2021 was actually lit.
2021 was great. Crazy.
Yeah. It wasn't. What would you say it was crazier than 2020? I wouldn't. I think 2020 was off the scale.
Yeah, 2020 was insane.
Yeah.
2021 was, but 2021 was like all the, like many of the changes in 2021 were like setting in. And people were like, oh, so this is how it is. Not just even COVID stuff, but the stuff with like black crime and like the fact that like black people are just allowed to get away with anything now. Like,
well, I've seen footage recently of them just stealing stuff from shops and just calmly walking out because
they
nobody...
don't even bother in certain cities to prosecute or even try to attempt to stop shoplifting.
Yeah, because at this point it's just such a minefield. It's,
Well, trying to put black people in jail is like impossible in America. It's not like totally impossible, but it's like a huge task. And many jurisdictions just give up on it, and they end up doing things like giving all kinds. That's like what exactly happened to Daryl Brooks. It's exactly what happened to Daryl Brooks. They don't want to deal with it. This guy was committing several crimes, including running someone over the car and shooting at somebody in a car. And they let him back out on the street with minimal bail both times because this is just what they do. There's people that ideologically do this, and there's other people that go along with it because they don't know how to fight it, and they want to keep their jobs.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like black people have to commit like really heinous crimes in order to get sent up at all anymore. And they are, you know, they're meeting that challenge, unfortunately.
Okay. Mike, will you do more live streams in the future?
Yes. Right, okay. Yes, we've been discussing this. We want to do more TRS live streams in the in 2022. Yes.
Okay. I mean, Odyssey is there, you know, it's, yeah. I want to use it until we don't have it anymore. While we do have
yeah, you might as well have it until you don't, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Everything's temporary in our world.
Yeah. Lord Wolfshield says NJP is inevitable.
Thank you. Nice. Nice.
Shivet says great stream and makes a small LBC doing it. Thank you very much. Okay, Defiant Irishman, thank you for that. Very nice. Okay. No matter what you think. Okay, hold on a minute. Oh, yeah. No matter what you think of the NJP or even Mike Enoch himself, even if you think he's a Fed, and I don't, You have to admit he's been one of the best guests on Millennial this year. Okay. Great speaker, great points. He's a strong voice of reason.
Thank you.
Okay. And then finally, Mike, you've been made tyrant of the US. Santa's present. Let's say, what would you do in your first week in office? You're tyrant of the US. What would you do? Can you answer this without Fed posting?
Yeah, sure I could. I would, the thing is, much of what we need to do, one, I would simply shut down the border, and I would pursue to go about seeing who had entered the country illegally and who had not, and remove those who had entered illegally. I would try and work on some kind of accommodation with those who had been led to believe they had entered legally under the previous system that, you know, and we would then do further policies to create a pro-white immigration policy. We would probably establish, you want to know what I would do? Go read the 25-point platform of the NJP. We would get to work on implementing that.
All right. Sorry, when I said Fed, I didn't mean to imply that.
No, I'm not going to.
I meant
people. No, that's not. I mean, people talk about that, but that's all that's just letting off steam, or people trying to entrap you into saying something stupid on the internet, or people just letting off steam, or both. You know. Yeah.
Okay, we've cleared a lot of those that whole backlog of questions, so I now feel more relaxed.
Okay, good.
Because I was worried that we were going to, you know, it was going to be a sort of emergency thing at the end.
I appreciate the people bringing up the disinfo and stuff, and that's, I appreciate that everyone sees through it, and I'm happy about that. But yeah, you know, generally speaking, we want to keep these things positive. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sorry that I didn't realize that one was about someone.
There's people that just keep that stuff in, and yeah, like it is what it is. It's fine. I'm not, you know, I'm just really happy that everyone in this stream seems to understand that it was disinformation, that whatever else, you know, and so, yeah.
Okay. Here's an interesting one from Bucko Media. Is abandoning the cities morally necessary for white men with families? I'll be honest, Mike, the diversity is, of course, a concern, but I still love urban life, the architecture, the Irish-American subculture, etc.
Yeah, this is a tough one because we talk about and E. Michael Jones, actually, his book, Slaughter of Cities, is actually a good book. It's actually a racial book more than anything, which is interesting. But what has been done to cities, I mean, when I lived in New York City for many years, and there's parts of New York City that I love, the architecture is fantastic in certain parts. Central Park is absolutely stunning in some parts. And the food is great, and there's some actually cool people there. I couldn't live there now. And certainly I would not recommend it if you have a family. One, it's just impossible to afford, okay? Literally, you have to have a lot of money if you want to live there and not live in some really very bad area. Like, you could afford to live there cheap, but you'd be in somewhere in Brooklyn or the Bronx, and you don't want to be there, okay? And then I would never tell anybody to do that. And it's sort of like what is like we kind of lament the death of any kind of white urban culture, which is a valid thing and is a great thing. You know, white people built all these wonderful cities, all these huge cities, all that wonderful, majestic architecture, the infrastructure. Like in New York City, it's going to have a problem because the people that are running it today don't even understand how it drains. Like the island of Manhattan, which you've been there, we've been there together before, actually. They don't at that German place. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember.
Yeah, that was a great night. But they don't understand how the city drains. They don't know. They've forgotten. It was built hundred years ago or more, and they don't know how the thing drains. They're just, it's happening still, but what happens when it doesn't anymore? They don't know how to fix it. So like this is the problem that we're going to be.
You know, I remember being in a certain city in Europe. And on the subway, and I thought, what the fuck is going to happen
when,
you know, 100 years from when there aren't any...
Already happening. Like, this idea, this labor shortage that we've been having in America, you know what it is? Is it because of COVID and all that stuff? Like, a lot of boomers just resigned early. They went into early retirement. And so now, whatever we say about boomers, like, sometimes they have, like, harebrained political ideas, but they're highly functional workers. Like, if you want a guy to fix your catalytic converter, if you want a guy to fix your sink, if you want a guy to do your plumbing, if you want a guy to do building around your house, someone to do handyman work, any, all this like functional necessary stuff, you want a white boomer. And those people resign, and it's like, okay, well, what are we gonna do? You know, and that's what's, that's like a big problem. It's really a white people shortage is what this country's going through right now. It's the shortage of its greatest resource, which is the white population. And this country cannot operate at the level, and certainly the UK is, and Europe is the same way. You cannot operate at American and European levels of civilization without a white, a robust white population. You can't. And yeah, this is something that is, that, and the elites, certain of them don't care. They just don't care. That was never, they're like, we're rich. What the hell do we care?
It's a very strange thing, because you think, what is on their mind? For what do they think is going to happen like 50 years from now? I really don't know what they're thinking.
I think for some of them, it's a plan. For others, it's myopia and going along with the plan for immediate rewards. Like I would say for the tribe, it's their plan.
Yeah.
For the people that go along with it, it's myopic because they're like, they don't think about it and they get immediate rewards. And they're like, okay, I'm famous now. I'm rich now. I have power now. I've got clout now. I don't care. Or I will be able to use that so that my children, et cetera, can escape it. But I'm like, at some point you have to wonder, what is the point? If you don't have a country, what is the point? Yeah. Do you want to live like this? And who really wants to? And we know that they don't. Because they leave the cities.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the thing. Why people vote with their feet. And you can see.
That's the vote that matters.
White flight is everywhere. Everywhere. Okay. Croatian idiot. Hold on a second. If NJP wins or gets really strong, Europe will follow. God bless you, Woz, and God bless NJP. Best wishes from Croatia. Thank you for that.
Thanks. Yeah, that's part of the idea, is that if we want to make the movement here strong, and that will in turn help Europe, because one of the, Europe has to not only deal with the question of the tribe, they have to deal with the question of America.
Yeah,
and all the leverage that America has over Europe.
Oh, so yeah.
Problems. Like right now, Europe has every reason to tell America to fuck off and go ahead and buy Iranian oil. I mean, oil and gas in Europe is freaking expensive. I was there like 20 years ago, and it was bad then. I was like, wait, really? That much? It was like €80 for a tank of gas. And I'm like, what? I mean,
I know, man, Americans are always amazed at the price of these things over here.
Yeah.
And also cigarettes, actually, as well.
Cigarettes are ridiculously expensive now, too. They weren't like 20 years ago, but they're like, maybe it's even worse there, but it's like $20 for a pack of cigarettes here now.
Yeah, that's a lot, but it's even more over here. It's like, I guess it'd be like $30.
Well, that's like
about 20. Yeah, yeah.
That's not like necessary. That's just the behavioral, because they want people to stop smoking. But like with the oil, like that's because America fucks around, frankly, and won't let Europe buy oil.
Alt Media says, "Hail Mike." Thank you. And Chain Reaction said, smoking made me look way too cool, and I wanted something to make more random people on the street yelling fag at me. So I also switched to vaping. Best move ever.
Well, you know. Yeah.
It's an image thing. All right. Okay, James says, Midwesterners do eat all sorts of variety of corn. Never insult the corn again, Mike. Also, your take on freshwater fish was frigid.
Okay. All right. Look, I don't know. Okay. First of all, it wasn't me. It was Sven that was insulting Midwestern food. I didn't do it. I went along with it only because he bullied me. And secondly, yes, that's fine. I don't eat fish, so I don't know. Maybe freshwater fish tastes great. My understanding is that freshwater fish are not great and saltwater fish are better. I could be wrong. I'm happy to be wrong with that. So I will acknowledge my error.
It's not one of the burning political issues.
Well, that's also what I get for opening my mouth when I don't know what the hell the story is, because I just don't eat fish. So,
okay. And then Big Ash Fan says again, hail NJP. So you've got lots of fans here.
I appreciate that.
I'm never sure how many of my fans are American. So it's interesting to see so many Well, because it could well be a European people saying it as well.
I think we got, I think we have the most reach in English speaking countries generally. So they could be Canadian, they could be British, English, Irish, they could be Australian, you know, who knows? Well, you'll know if they're Australian because the shitposting will just be off the charts. But like,
tell me about it.
Also, are they allowed to even use computers anymore?
A kangaroo watching over them all the time.
Right.
All right. So that's all the, yeah, I think that's all the questions. Fucking hell. I was really worried we weren't going to get through them all.
That's good.
Yeah. So now I feel like I can relax. Was good. There anything else good. That I was, see, that's dominated like the last hour.
Oh, we know.
We've been going for an hour and a half. Okay. So, I've forgotten what else I was going to, I did want you to, talk about briefly about crypto, just to suggest your own thoughts about that. Because I had heard that you were relying entirely on crypto in order to escape the, you know, the fiat system. This is something that I can see being a necessity for many of us in the near future. So would you like to give a spiel about that?
Yeah, well, no, we use crypto. I mean, if you want, I mean, for our paywall, the best thing if you want to get your paywall turned on right away is crypto. Because as soon as your transaction processes on the blockchain, your account will be opened. When people send us money through the mail, they do have to wait. They have to wait till we get it, and then they make the order, and then it's sitting there. And then when the money order arrives, we turn the account on. So it's, but hey, I like the fact that people have the time preference to do that. And a lot of people do. And we always just say, well, if you don't want to do that, just send us a year, send us 2 years. You can send us as much as you want. You can send us 5 years and we'll give you a 5-year subscription. Whatever you want to send, you can do. It's not, you could send us whatever, anything over $30, send us and we'll give you that many months. But with crypto, yes, I do think it's necessary. And I think that people need to acquaint themselves with it, whether you're a listener, an audience member, a supporter, or a personality in this. You have to learn how to take payments if you're a personality, and you have to learn how to give them if you're just a supporter. It's not very hard. I know
it can be intimidating, but it's really not very hard.
It's not very hard, and the amount of ID that they ask for is intimidating, but it's really, I don't believe that it's more than what you need to show to just open a bank account. Like, they want an ID, and in some cases they want, in America, they, you know, we have the social security number, which is basically your ID number, your national ID number, which is beyond, that's what it's used for.
Something similar. In Britain, it's called the national insurance number. It's the same.
Right. They pretend like it's not just your national, like your citizen number, right? Which is just what, you might as well just call it, here's your citizen, here's your Goyim wage slave number, right? Like, like, they should just call it that. But yeah, no, I mean, it's effectively the social security, national insurance, same thing. It's like, oh, it's you're benefiting. But I can also understand why a government would want to have a number for its citizens in the huge administrative systems like this. But,
well, inevitably, there will be another. Even if you didn't have a national insurance number, there's inevitably going to be a number somewhere for you. I mean, it's right. How could they not?
It is what it is. And so, so that's like, you have to basically give, yes, your name, social security number, and ID and such when you do it. And then they sometimes want to take like a picture of you to make sure it's matching with your ID. But if you think about it, that's just like the same thing when someone looks at your, if you're in person at the bank, the teller looks at your ID, looks at your face. It's kind of, they just do that over the computer. It is intimidating and it's creepy, and I get it. But in the end, we've never had anybody get in trouble from giving us cryptocurrency ever. Additionally, one thing that is very important, I always say, is that you want to make sure if you're taking Bitcoin payments, don't take one Bitcoin address. And if you're doing this, I'm sorry, but don't take one Bitcoin address and just like put it on your website, because one, they can track how much funds you have, and they can then look who's giving you funds and trace back to their accounts. And this is some people have done this in the past, and people have lost their crypto accounts on things like Coinbase. And on a system that we use, you get a new address every time. And we actually have, sometimes people don't complete the payment. I have like a wallets with like hundreds of unused addresses, because people sometimes start a payment and they don't finish it. Most people do complete it. Never use that address again. It's never used again, other than to move the funds to where we ultimately, you know, do whatever we do with them. But that address is never used again. So if they actually, here's something I'm actually proud of. They complained about this to the U.S. Congress about the NJP, that the NJP's donation structure was such that we were giving every donor an individual Bitcoin address, so they couldn't know how much funds we had, and they couldn't track people giving money to us. They literally complained about this in front of Congress.
It's unbelievable, the effrontery that they want. The ability to intimidate people.
You have the right to know how much money I have and who my donors are. Can I see that for you, ADL? It was the ADL doing it.
Yeah.
They literally said that we are concerned. And of course, they raise it as if it's a concern that every decent person should have. But most people would be like, I don't care how much crypto these guys have. That's their business. Right. And so they're like, they're mad. They don't know how much we have, and they don't know how much who our donors are. It's like, what gives you the right? What gives you the right to think you have the right to know any of that?
Yeah, it's grotesque. I don't know what to say. It's just amazing how entitled these people are. And but they think that they've made the moral case for our wickedness at this point. So they should be able to do this.
Other elites, they effectively have, or at the very least, they've made the case that this is your job. Your job is to take care of this problem for us. Right. And so what I would say is, though, even though it is intimidating, it's necessary for the future funding of our movement, because it's something that we have right now. They might find a way to shut it down in the future. I don't know. Sometimes people like to have black pills about everything. Oh, that is going to die. It's going to die. I don't care. It's live now. It works now. So you should use it right now. And it's really helpful to creators and to people out here doing it, like you and me and us and all. Like,
I mean,
to be able to do this, and I think it's kind of an obligation of you as a listener and a supporter to learn how to get a crypto account and to buy some crypto and use it to donate and stuff like that. I think you should do that. It's not very big of a problem, and yes, you're going to have to give over certain information about yourself, but it's the same as having a bank account. And the way we do it, we make sure to protect everyone's identity, and no one's even told us their crypto account was even banned after giving us crypto. So,
yeah. It's there's also Bitcoin Lightning, which I believe gives a layer of anonymity, but I'm not sure about that. But at any rate,
not so much anonymity. It might be anonymity. My understanding is it's just supposed to go faster because the Bitcoin Lightning is slow.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know actually I don't know the ins and outs of how that works, but yeah, some people like it. We just use the normal Bitcoin main chain, mainnet, because it's just that's how we're set up.
yeah. I mean, I'm trying to get people into, well, definitely crypto in general, but also Bitcoin Lightning, because I realized it would be the perfect thing for doing super chats with. So I'm going to try to encourage people, you know, next year to do
that. When we were doing the when we were doing the fundraising stream for Media to Rise and NJP and the Waukesha documentary, I had it so that they could just go to NJPNationalJusticeParty.com and go to donate, complete the transaction, put the message in the box, and I had the wallet open so I could see transactions coming in. Now that I saw them come in, I could just see what address that was and go back to the page I had all the donations coming in on, and see, like, okay, that one's actually completed the transaction. Now I'll read the message, etc. Right. So I could do it. So it was kind of like a roundabout super chat method, but yes, I could see Lightning working well for something like that. Yeah.
And I should say that there's a page on my website that has three different quick starts for getting into crypto, getting started, so you can choose whichever one you want.
Well, that's good. Yeah, we should do something like that. That might help, actually.
Yeah,
I love to do crypto.
Yeah, how to get started.
People, we tend to just browbeat people.
I tend to think that people see. I want things to be as simple as possible when I'm using them. So, and a quick start guide is always what I go to. I don't read the fucking manual. You go to the quick start guide. So. I thought it'd be a good idea to do the same thing for the listeners. So there are, as I say, three different quick starts, and it's like the first one has three steps, the second one has two steps, and the third one has six steps. That's actually using how to use an exchange. So I've tried to make it as simple as possible for people. Mm. And hopefully there will be a take-up. I think there are... I'm optimistic about it. And as I say...
You guys have Kraken?
Yeah, it exists. I've not used it myself.
That's the change that I like the most. And even though I rag on Lulberts a lot, the guy who's the CEO of that company is kind of like an ideological libertarian. And whatever else, I know ideological libertarians have principles. So I trust him to be true to those principles. If not to necessarily be someone who's my political ally, I trust him to be true to the principle of free speech. And if he's not ever, then that will be a problem. But so far, he does seem to actually believe in it. And I will give him credit for that.
Yeah. And that's indeed true. Libertarians can almost be too principled. It's like part of the libertarian thing is that they're sort of autistic about principles. But that can also be a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing when you're benefiting from it, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. So the final thing was just to say that I think that crypto is going to be essential for the future of what we do. So that's why I think people should get into it. And as you said, I wouldn't say that people are obligated to do it, but it would be good if they felt obligated to do it.
You're kind of like obliged to do it, I guess, not obligated. Maybe let's like take it down a notch. But like, I think you should do it. If you want to support, it's the best way to support. And also, like, the other thing is that when you do and it goes up, you gave us more money than you intended and you didn't even have to do it. Like, we've got guys that have bought Bitcoin subscriptions like a year and a half ago. And like, you know, well, of course I don't hold any of that. I never would do that. So, but in theory, had I held it, it would be worth more. But of course I didn't. We just immediately, of course. We don't hold on to it or anything like that. No, we would never do something like that.
No, of course not. All right. Well, let's end it there then, because I'm the next guest is due on, and that's Mr. D.
Okay, cool.
But this is we have
already over time a little bit, but thank you very much.
Did I post this URL? Oh yeah, if I didn't, here it is again. That's the URL for the Quick Starts About Crypto. Okay, so this has been great. It's been a very lively one, but it's been very interesting. So, okay, Mike Enoch, thanks for taking part in Millennium.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. I really had a lot of fun. This was great. Love talking to you. We should talk more often. Definitely message me whenever you want. We'll chat.
Okay, all right. Great to talk to you, man. All right, good. I've enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
All right. I'll be back soon. See you later.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.
Hold on, I just realized there were actually a few questions that came in at the last minute.
I was about to log off.
Sorry. No problem. Okay, sorry, everyone.
That was a cool NFT. That was a great ad, by the way. That was...
Thank you.
That was good.
Thank you.
I don't know. I was laughing. I don't know if it was meant to be funny, but
there's meant to be a layer of humor there, yeah.
Okay, all right. Good.
Okay, Mick the Knife asked, is there a place for half whites in the movement, or should they be considered other?
That's a tough question, man. I think it's great to have people that support us of all races, but there are going to be places that are going to be for only white people. I mean, the thing is that I understand the question because I know that there's people that are maybe mixed or even another race that see the morality of what we're doing. And I appreciate that. And I want to have allies like that. But at the same time, you also have to understand white people are under attack and there are going to be spaces that we are going to want to reserve only for whites. And I think that a lot of them, a lot of people do realize and respect that.
Yeah, I think so. And Happy Perspective says, Mike is great. There you go. Yeah. Vampire Squid and Chavez Garcia donated some LBC credits. Thank you for that. And Jay Caillou says, please don't take it the wrong way, but I am paranoid about getting doxxed if I join TRS. Is it completely secure?
I mean, well, the one thing I'll say, I understand the question, and it seems like kind of like, well, of course, I would only ever answer that one way, which is the way I would answer it, which is we have never had somebody who it was leaked that they had an account on TRS and they got doxxed. That has not ever happened. And if you join, you do not have to give over any personal information. A lot of people create a burner email account just for their TRS account. You don't have to give us your real name. And if you use cryptocurrency, we'll never have any way of knowing who you are. If you send us a money order, you don't necessarily have any way of knowing where that came from. Like, we don't know who, unless we know personally people that we've met through meetings, IRL meetings, through the pool party network and such, I don't know who the users are. Some people sometimes just sign up with their real name because they're not particularly afraid. And those people have been fine too. Those names have never been revealed either. So yes, it's secure. Excellent. I understand the paranoia, and I understand that asking the question is kind of funny because it's like, of course I'm going to say yes, but it's also like, I understand why it's kind of like just a mental security thing. Like, I'm just going to ask. And yeah, then, you know?
Yeah. I can imagine someone saying, well, I really should have asked before taking that leap. And so they want that reassurance. It's a human thing. Alt Media said 900 live viewers. We are almost at YouTube levels. And this is what I mean. You know, millennial this year, I was preparing myself for it to be a fucking downer because this is the first one off YouTube. And yet it's just been fantastic. I mean, the atmosphere, the view counts have been good. The questions have been thick and fast. And the buzz has just been fantastic. The best one yet. And I can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah, I mean, when we went on to – we have an Odyssey channel. TRS has one where we don't get particularly impressive view counts. That's probably my fault because I haven't been consistent about putting up videos. When I was consistent about putting up videos on YouTube for about a year, in 2018 and 2019, we were getting 20, 25,000 views on the videos pretty regularly. And it was good. And we did grow and expand because of that. We're getting about 3, 4, 5,000 views on Odyssey. And NJP videos get like the best one, I think, has like 12 or 13,000 views. And those are also of our speeches, which get very widely distributed, and also that, you know, also they get like 50,000 views on Telegram and stuff like that. So, and on BitChute, still some people they're still on there, and of course people download them and publish them elsewhere. I sometimes see, like, I go and if I see like an NJP video, I'm like, there's like three other the exact same video that other people have put up. But so it has been better than I thought, but it would be great if all the people on YouTube. My thing is that there's just nothing on YouTube anymore. There's nothing.
Tell me about it.
It is a wasteland. And it's been that way for about a year, if not more, like that it's just been an utter political wasteland. So I think people are going to just come to Odyssey because there's nothing else to do. There's nowhere else to go or be. And BitChute is...
Yeah. Well, Odyssey is an inviting place. Let's put it that way.
Odyssey is... It works well. BitChute always had technical issues and you couldn't control your comment section. And so people could just come and you'd have to either, you couldn't just delete like shill comments or comments that were people malicious comments and stuff. You had to just either live with it being there or just shut the comments down entirely, which is just stupid because of how they were using it. And there's other technical issues, but yeah.
And a lot of people just opted to shut down the comments entirely because otherwise you're creating so much work for yourself.
I did.
To go through all these.
You can't go through them. You can't. I mean, unless they change something, you couldn't. When I was using it, you could not delete comments.
Yeah, you have to flag it as spam. Yeah, I know.
No, in the end just shut down the comments because I was like, I don't need like the shill and the malicious crap coming in. And yeah.
Yeah.
But okay, I don't do that on Odyssey because the comments on Odyssey are great. I see one or two every once in a while, but they're mostly just great, fantastic community on Odyssey. Yeah,
it's weird. I really don't understand. I think it's almost like because people can tell it's a high quality website, it attracts.
They're not higher quality up.
People.
It's really
strange.
You're right. Yeah, yeah.
It also gives
you the tools you need to curate properly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, which is essential. And then finally, Chain Reaction said, legends. I think he's referring to you and me. So thank you very much, Chain Reaction.
Appreciate it.
All right. Okay, on that note, I'm going to end this one now. So, Mike,
Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year. And we'll talk soon.
Okay, excellent. See you later. Bye-bye. Cool.